Welcome to the show. There are basically two camps in the U.S. when it comes to health. One camp believes whatever the establishment says. The other camp pretty much believes anything the establishment says about health is lies for the purpose of generating profits for Big Pharma, Big Med, and Big Food. With Donald Trump being sworn in on January 20th, 2025, and having already named a number of people he wants confirmed to various government positions that bear upon national health policy, some folks are anticipating a health apocalypse, while others believe this is an opportunity to turn around the declining health of the American people. The question we'll be exploring today is whether any of that is likely to occur, and the answer is very likely not what you expect.
The Dr. Reality Vodcast with Dave Champion.
Let's start with this. I'm the author of Body Science, a groundbreaking book on human physiology that many readers tell me saved their lives or the lives of their loved ones. I'm also a student of government and have been for three decades. I've written copiously on various aspects of the federal government and the U.S. Constitution, as well as having lectured on the Second, 14th, and 16th Amendments. I am the author of Income Tax, Shattering the Myths, the best-selling comprehensive compendium of rock-solid evidence that tells the American people the truth of the income tax, a truth the United States Supreme Court recently confirmed as legally factual and accurate in a decision entitled Moore v. United States, handed down in June of 2024. I'll put a link to my video on the Moore decision down in the notes. I share those things with you to make the point that much of my professional history and expertise converge when it comes to the question of what may or may not be possible concerning government health policy moving into 2025 and beyond. As a quick aside, I'm running a special offer on my books. I'll share that information with you at the end of the presentation. Full disclosure, my years of experience with human physiology, disease, the medical industry, and government places me firmly in the camp that most health narratives put out by the establishment are scientifically false, intended to generate increased revenue for trillion-dollar industries. I would like to see that change. Within the MAGA community, there is a subset with an agenda referred to as MAHA, Make America Healthy Again, which is obviously a spinoff from the slogan, Make America Great Again. MAHA people believe Trump's appointments to the Department of Health and Human Services and agencies such as the National Institutes of Health and the CDC will bring about profound change. Many of them see the next 4 years as the only opportunity in their lifetime to change the direction of U.S. government health policies. They sincerely want all Americans to be healthy, and they see the government as a major culprit in the decline in American health. It is an indisputable fact that since the early 1980s, when the government began telling Americans what to do and not do to be healthy, the health of the American people has declined dramatically, while the cost of treating their health problems has soared. Here's just one example of how the government has lied to the American people. In 1987, U.S. Surgeon General C. Everett Koop issued a report saying that two of every three deaths in America was due to overconsumption of saturated fat. His report stated that evidence concerning saturated fat and heart disease was stronger than the evidence regarding smoking and lung cancer. But here's the thing. Not one word of that was true. When Koop made the public proclamation, there was not a shred of clinical evidence that dietary fat increased one's chances of getting heart disease. Koop's pronouncement was pure propaganda. Despite that, hundreds of millions of Americans believed him for no better reason than they could not imagine a U.S. Surgeon General would lie to them. If I delved into all the factors and players responsible for the dramatic decline of American health over the last several decades, this would be a very long presentation. But if you're interested, I discuss that in some detail in Body Science. The purpose of today's presentation is to help set reasonable expectations concerning what changes may occur in federal health care policy over the next 4 years. All federal civilian health policy emanates from the Department of Health and Human Services, known by the acronym HHS. Because that's from where all civilian health policy emanates, HHS will be our focus today. Trump's pick to lead HHS is RFK Jr. Without getting into the specifics of his views on various subjects, I believe RFK Jr.'s friends and foes would agree that he's going to bring an entirely new mindset to being the Secretary of HHS. Acknowledging that he has an entirely different mindset about the job than his predecessors, what changes can we expect? The answer is very little in the way of substance. I'm going to explain why that is, and then I'm going to share what I believe he can achieve at the helm of HHS. Let's begin by looking at how all federal departments, including HHS, operate. Cabinet-level departments, as well as the agencies within those departments, are controlled by federal statutes. I don't think most Americans understand that. Congress passes statutes, what the public calls laws, and those laws designate which cabinet-level department is to carry the law into effect. The head of the designated department then creates a document called a delegation of authority order by which he or she delegates the authority downward, usually to the head of the appropriate office or agency within the department. So, what does that look like over at HHS? The Secretary of HHS has 28 individual offices and agencies under his authority. Let's look at a few of those to get an idea of what an HH secretary is facing. One agency within HHS is the NIH, the National Institutes of Health. The director of NIH has 29 separate components under his authority. One of those 29 components is an office known as the Administration for Strategic Preparedness and Response. The director of the Administration for Strategic Preparedness and Response has 35 individual components under his authority, and on it goes. The Secretary of HHS literally has hundreds of individual components within the department. HHS has more than 80,000 employees and an annual budget of more than $1.8 trillion, and everything it does is controlled by law. I know more about the ways and means by which the federal government operates than probably 99.9% of the American public, and I am the author of a book on human physiology. So, if I was the Secretary of HHS, how long would it take me to understand all of what HHS does? I don't mean reading a list of things it does. I mean understanding the details of what every component does in order that I could be an effective leader. I'm guessing if I worked 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, it would take me months to completely understand what every single one of the hundreds of individual HHS components do. But if I was investing 10 hours a day, 5 days a week on that, I would not be attending to many other duties of the secretary. If I split my time between the high-level duties of the secretary and learning the details of every component of the department, it would probably be a year before I completely understood all the details. I mean no disrespect to RFK Jr. when I say the odds that he's going to do what I just described are zero. Let's return to the fact that all of HHS's duties are controlled by law. A moment ago, I discussed what it would take for me to understand the details of what every component within HHS does. But here's the thing. That is a trivial endeavor compared to knowing all the laws Congress has enacted since 1939 that have established the duties HHS is legally mandated to perform. I say since 1939 because that's the year that HHS's predecessor, the Federal Security Agency, was created. That said, Congress was passing laws well before 1939 that are still carried out by HHS today. Imagine having to know 100 years worth of laws, virtually all of which have been amended time and again, in order to have a clear understanding of HHS's duties. Some folks might suggest RFK Jr. should rely on the 700 employees of HHS's Office of General Counsel for that. But if he relies on OGC attorneys rather than knowing the law for himself, then he's taking someone else's word for how things need to work. As someone who has interacted with lawyers for the last 30 years, I can tell you that anyone who relies on attorneys to tell them what complex laws really mean is a fool. My primary area of expertise is income tax law, and in the last 30 years, I have never met a single lawyer, including tax attorneys, who know what the law actually says. With that experience over the last 30 years, I'd be loath to take the word of an OGC lawyer for what the law requires RFK Jr. to do or not do. Again, with no disrespect to RFK Jr., he's not going to educate himself on 100 years of federal law. He's going to take the word of the lawyers in the Office of General Counsel. And here's something you likely don't know. HHS is legally mandated to work with the Department of Defense on numerous projects. That's a rat's nest I'm not going to get into today, but it adds to the complexity of HHS's work. Why do I share all of this with you? Four reasons. First, so you understand the scale of the challenge any HHS secretary faces who wants to affect change. How does one affect change without knowing the details of what every HHS component does? How does one affect change if one takes the word of government lawyers for what HHS is legally required to do, or perhaps what it's not authorized to do? Second, because RFK Jr. won't know the details of every component of HHS, and he will be taking the word of the department's attorneys for what HHS is required to do, he is effectively hamstrung from affecting meaningful change. Third, because the duties of HHS are established in law, special interest groups will file suit to block virtually anything he attempts to change. Fourth, most of the statutes controlling HHS also have regulations promulgated to precisely detail how Congress's statutes will be implemented. Those regs were created in compliance with the Administrative Procedures Act, known as the APA, which is a federal law governing how federal agencies develop and issue regulations. It is a complex and lengthy process. And guess what? If RFK Jr. wants to change any regulation on any issue, those changes have to go through the lengthy and tedious APA process. So, what's the takeaway from this? Hopefully, you get the point that making changes in government operations is the polar opposite of how things work in the private sector. I bring that up because less than half of 1% of Americans work for the federal government. That means roughly 99.5% of Americans have no idea how things work within the federal government. They think someone like RFK Jr. can walk into his office at HHS and change whatever he wants, just like Elon Musk did after he bought Twitter. You should now understand that isn't remotely how government works. Perhaps you see why I believe it's important to set realistic expectations. But I also said we discuss things RFK Jr. can do, so let's get into that. The very first beneficial thing he can do after being sworn in is publicly state that the U.S. government's food pyramid is a fraud, existing to promote agricultural industry profits, not the health of the American people. That factual statement would set a fantastic tone from day one. Before I continue, if you value this sort of information, which you likely won't get anywhere else, please take a moment to subscribe to the channel and hit the like button so the algorithms will show this content to more people. And remember, there's a special offer for you at the end. HHS is the second largest source of funding for scientific research in the world, with its research outlay being more than $70 billion every year. While RFK Jr. can't really change HHS, he can allocate some of that funding to bold research that is not being done. By bold research, I mean powerful, short-term studies that will upend long-standing, widely believed, false establishment narratives on various health subjects. Furthermore, as HHS Secretary, RFK Jr. has a megaphone. He can hold press conferences whenever it suits him to release the results of bold, hard-hitting studies. In the Dave Champion model of what RFK Jr. should do, the gloves come off. Those who lie to the American people about health science in order to promote the interests of trillion-dollar industries must be named publicly by HHS. RFK Jr. must use his office as a bully pulpit. Here's an example of how I would handle such matters if I was the HHS secretary. I would hold a press conference and make this statement. If everyone in America who is a type 2 diabetic began eating carnivore style tomorrow, there would not be a single type 2 diabetic left in America in 120 days. As I said, bold and hard-hitting. The establishment would immediately close ranks against that truth because big food, big med, and big pharma stand to lose trillions of dollars if the American people accept that truth. The Secretary's office should create and maintain a list of every medical professional, journalist, organization, and news outlet that says RFK Jr.'s claim is false. As soon as the story about his statement drops out of the news cycle, RFK Jr. should quietly launch a study with type 2 diabetics eating carnivore style for 120 days. Knowing the study results will be viciously attacked, the study will need to be planned and executed in such a way that its results cannot be effectively disputed. To ensure the results can't be disputed, this would be my model. The study would involve 500 participants. Each participant would have to be certified by his or her personal physician as being a type 2 diabetic. All participants would live for 4 months at an unused part of a military base, physically separated from the rest of the base. Each participant would be paid $4,000 a month, which would allow them to stay current on expenses such as mortgage or rent, vehicle payments, child support payments, etc., over the four-month period. Each participant would agree to leave only in an emergency, and if they left, their compensation would end and they'd be dropped from the study. Their carnivore meals would be prepared by a food preparation staff. Participants would be free to eat as much as desired during each of the 4 meal periods per day. No other food would be available. Half the participants would be engaged in moderate daily resistance training and cardio, while the other half would not. A thorough blood panel would be done once a week. In terms of supplementation, vitamin D and salt would be the standard daily issue, with minimum and maximum permissible levels for each. All participants would wear a blood glucose monitor 24/7, and the data would be uploaded to a central database in real time. Body weight would be taken each day before the first meal. Body compensation measurements would be taken once a week. The facility would offer a wide variety of activities to keep the participants entertained and informed during their stay. On the 121st day, all data collected from the participants over their four-month stay would be presented to an independent panel of not less than 5 MDs. Those MDs will certify all the participants as no longer being type 2 diabetics. I say certify all participants as no longer being diabetics because I already know what the outcome will be. The point of the study is for the other 334 million Americans to learn about the dramatic outcome that took place in just 120 days. Once the study has been completed, RFK Jr. should hold a press conference at which he will share an outline of the study and let the assembled press know that not a single participant showed any signs of type 2 diabetes by the end of the study period. He should tell the reporters he's going to give them a complete study detail, but before he does, his staff has important information to share. At that point, an HHS spokesperson should read aloud the names of the journalists, news outlets, organizations, and commenters who said RFK Jr.'s statement about being able to end type 2 diabetes within 120 days was wrong, unscientific, and dangerous. At the conclusion of the list, the spokesperson should emphasize that the names just read aloud are people, companies, and organizations no American should ever trust concerning health matters because they publicly condemned as false something that was and is scientifically factual. The spokesperson should then tell the audience that the list of names is on HHS's website for all to see and give the URL. This is what I mean by taking the gloves off. Those who oppose scientific truth that will make Americans healthy should be called out publicly by the HHS secretary. Those of us who support real science and want Americans to be healthy have been providing facts, data, and evidence and have been courteous in our battle with the opposition. That approach has failed because it cannot compete with billions of dollars, trillion-dollar industries pour into promoting the lies that keep their profits rolling in. As things stand today, there is no price to pay for lying to the American people for the purpose of making them diseased or more diseased. In fact, many organizations that lie about health matters are rewarded handsomely by big pharma, big food, and big med in the form of grants or advertising contracts. RFK Jr. will have the ability to show the American people which persons and organizations are lying to them in exchange for money. If RFK Jr. doesn't want to do it personally, he can hire me as his spokesperson, and I'll gladly do it. Another example of a short-term, hard-hitting study that can be done is improving cognition in dementia patients using the carnivore style of eating. As a side note, I disclose the true scientific cause of Alzheimer's in Body Science, as well as how to ensure you don't get Alzheimer's. The trillion-dollar industries I mentioned won't tell you the truth about Alzheimer's because there's no money in it for them by telling you the truth. Their money comes from hiding the simple understanding of how not to get it, and then selling you obscenely expensive drugs for the rest of your life. In Body Science, I tell you how not to get Alzheimer's because I don't want you to have it. It's that simple. When the dementia study is concluded, RFK Jr. should use the same format previously discussed to name for the American people those who have been lying to them about Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. There are many short-term, hard-hitting studies that can be done during RFK Jr.'s four-year term. I hope you'll do them. Even in circumstances in which scientifically establishing the truth requires long-term studies, RFK Jr. can not only fund those studies, but he can use his megaphone as the secretary to get the American people on the right track. One example of that would be telling the public that, at its core, cancer is, in reality, a metabolic disease. Another example would be telling the American people the truth that cholesterol has nothing to do with heart disease and is, in reality, a healing substance. Then there are the systemic changes that need to be made. One example is Big Pharma paying 75% of the budget of the FDA's drug division. No matter what one may think of the FDA, as long as it remains a federal agency, Congress should fund it, not the industry the FDA is supposed to be regulating. Speaking of the FDA, it's an agency within HHS, so RFK Jr. can change the scientific testing standards for drug approval, which I hope he does. As an aside, if you want to understand why Big Pharma, Big Med, and Big Food are never put in check by the government, even when the science shows that what they're doing is harmful, read up on something called regulatory capture. Another thing I hope RFK Jr. does is publicly release every document possessed by any agency or office within HHS containing information about SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, and the mRNA injections, improperly called vaccines. The American people have a right to see 100% of that information, and the Biden administration refused to let the American people see it. RFK Jr. will have a lot on his plate when he becomes Secretary of HHS, but in my opinion, one of his top priorities should be releasing those documents to the American people. Having discussed some of the things RFK Jr. can do, the big question is, will he? I wish I was more optimistic. Do you remember in 2016 when Trump said he was going to release all the JFK assassination documents held by the government? Well, he released some, but he kept 1,100 pages classified. JFK was murdered 6 decades ago. There is no reason the American people can't see every single document the government possesses on that matter. But Trump didn't do that. Remember the 2016 campaign chant, "Lock her up!" Yet, after Trump was elected, he declined to do so, saying Bill and Hillary are good people. Whether one sees Bill and Hillary as good people or bad people isn't the point. The point is that Trump has a track record of telling voters he's going to do certain things and then not doing them, especially if the issue pertains to the elites in American society. Which brings me to the next point of concern. Trump recently dined with Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla, afterward describing him as highly respected. The only people who highly respect Albert Bourla are those who support rigged drug trials, manipulated data, blatant lying, and killing millions of people for corporate profit. Yet, after Trump met with Bourla, he referred to him as highly respected. Then there is the issue that Trump has never taken action or supported any action that would harm any trillion-dollar industry. Combine that with his Bourla remark, and I question whether he will allow RFK Jr. to do anything that threatens the wealth of Big Pharma, Big Med, and Big Food, which would mean business as usual. You have no idea how much I hope I'm wrong. So, let's say RFK Jr. does not do anything like I've described today. What then? So here's the ugly truth. The real problem is not the government. It's the public. Let me give you an example of the point I'm trying to make. My book on human physiology, Body Science, is a game changer for human health. So, how many Americans have read Body Science compared to how many consume establishment lies about nutritional physiology and disease put out by the media and paid for by Big Pharma, Big Med, and Big Food? Well, the rough numbers go a bit like this. Tens of thousands of people have read Body Science since it was published 6 years ago. Well, millions of people consume propaganda every day that's paid for by Big Pharma, Big Med, and Big Food. Despite the fact that Body Science is 100% scientifically accurate and has saved countless lives, it cannot compete with the billions of dollars spent every year to put fake science, propaganda, in front of the American people. Here's an example of propaganda that popped up on social media as I was putting my notes together for this presentation. What you're seeing is an article run by the British publication Mail Online in its wellness section. The title reads, "Sunbathing for just one day may increase your risk of heart disease and stop the body fighting infections, study suggests." Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 100, with 100 being completely factual and 1 being completely non-factual, that story is a negative 10. I'll put links in the notes to several videos in which I call out by name organizations and medical doctors who lie about physiology and human health, thus corruptly moving Americans away from becoming healthy. The important takeaway from those videos is that it isn't just government that's spreading the lies and propaganda to keep Americans unhealthy. Medical doctors and nurses are involved. They are literally touting their medical credentials as a means of getting uninformed Americans to believe their lies. Of course, that isn't the only example of people in a particular industry spreading disinformation. Those in the U.S. accounting industry, which in 2023 took in an astounding $147 billion, tell the public everyone owes income tax, which is the lie that produces most of that $147 billion. The difference between the lies being told by those in the accounting industry and those in the medical field is MDs and RNs know they're lying, while those in the accounting industry actually believe the falsehoods they're perpetuating. Let me explain. Most licensed accountants have at least a 4-year degree in accounting. During those 4 years, 100% of their training implicitly informs them that everyone who makes money owes income tax. Another way to phrase it is, they come away from their training taught to view everyone who earns money as a potential revenue source in terms of preparing tax returns. Never once, not once in 4 years at their institution of higher learning are they told there are Americans who earn money and don't owe income tax. Now, here's the kicker on this. If accounting students were to read Income Tax Shattering the Myth, they would learn that American citizens living and working in the states of the Union, earning their own domestic income, are not now, nor have they ever been, the people upon whom the U.S. income tax has been imposed. Phrased another way, Congress has never imposed the income tax on ordinary, hardworking Americans like you. I've been discussing the truth of the income tax for more than 30 years. In that time, I've talked with hundreds of accountants. Not one of them has known what the law says about who the tax has been imposed upon and upon whom it has not. Not one accountant has known anything about it because in 4 years of schooling, sometimes 5.5 years if they go for a master's, that subject is never discussed. So you see, there's a difference between medical personnel who know damn well they're lying when they make absurd statements such as that red meat causes type 2 diabetes, and accountants who genuinely believe the falsehoods they're putting out. They believe it because they cannot imagine that during 4 or 5 years of higher education in accounting, their alma mater failed to tell them something so crucial. There are 3 reasons institutions of higher education do not tell accounting students the truth. First, and most obvious, is there's massive industry financial disincentive to tell them the truth. Second, accountants aren't lawyers. It's not their place to pronounce who the law requires to file and who it does not. In fact, any accountant who makes a statement such as, "You're required to file a return," is exceeding his or her scope of practice and committing a crime called practicing law without a license. Third, and perhaps of more immediate concern to a university, the government would pull that school's accounting program accreditation in a hot second if they began telling their students a truth the government is desperate to keep hidden from the American people. Let me give you an example. I live about an hour from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, which has an accounting program. If UNLV hired me to lecture about the truth of the income tax, within days, UNLV would be informed that if it continued allowing me to lecture, it would lose its accounting program accreditation. The important thing of which to take stock is the government would threaten UNLV not because what I would be showing the students is false, but because I'd be informing them of a truth they can research for themselves after they leave the lecture, and they would discover it's all factual. There are two types of professionals the government will do anything in its power to keep from knowing the truth: accountants and lawyers. Why is that? Because there's a dramatic difference between your neighbor or a buddy at work telling you you don't need to file and pay income tax versus a CPA telling you that, or your attorney. Attorneys and accountants are the gatekeepers of the government's false income tax narrative. Imagine being a gatekeeper whose job it is to make sure Americans don't learn the truth, whether it's health and physiology or income tax. It's incredibly simple to learn the truth, but people only pay attention to government propaganda and crap they see in the press, such as the Mail Online garbage about sunbathing causing heart disease. The majority of my life, I have held the view that if Americans are shown the truth, they will act on it, whether it deals with health or personal liberty. I'm recording this at the beginning of 2025, and I believe the time has come for me to admit I have been wrong about that. Rather than being concerned with what is true, what is supported by facts, data, and evidence, the masses adopt whatever narrative is put out by the establishment. As you might imagine, I find that accepting anything the government or trillion-dollar industries say about physiology, nutrition, medical interventions, pharmacology, etc., is a prescription for ill health. But since American sheep love to be told what to do by government, let's see what's accomplished by RFK Jr. speaking as the highest-ranking health official in the U.S. government. Whatever happens cannot be worse than the dramatic decline in the health of the American people over the last 60 years. For those of you who want the objective, credible science on how to get and remain incredibly healthy, this is a great time to get in front of the curve by reading Body Science. I practice what I preach. For the last 7 years, I've followed everything you'll learn in body science, and at 65, I'm as healthy as I was at 25. If you want to keep from getting chronic diseases such as diabetes, obesity, hypertension, heart disease, cancer, kidney disease, Alzheimer's, and more, or you've got some of those and want them gone, read Body Science and put into action what you learn. It's that simple. Another area in which I practice what I preach is the income tax. I haven't filed or paid in 32 years. I wrote the best-selling book on the subject and speak about it nationally. And let me be crystal clear, this isn't about the money. It's about the American people being lied to by their own government for at least 60 years in what is the most successful disinformation campaign in history to convince you to give the federal government money you do not owe them and never have by keeping you ignorant and scared. In short, the government is committing the largest financial crime in world history against its own citizens. Can I be blunt with you for a moment? If you think the government doing that is okay, you are the problem with this country. But I'm going to give you an opportunity to become someone Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, or John Adams would respect. And here's the good news. You don't need to engage in rebellion or even civil disobedience. You only need to do two things. Number one, read what the law actually says rather than taking the government's word for it. More on that in a moment. And two, after you know what the law says, follow the law. So I ask you, can you summon up the courage to get informed and follow the law? Jeez, how do you get informed? There are two ways. One is to spend years of your life reading income tax law until you understand it backwards and forwards. That's how I did it, because in the early 90s, when I embarked on my research, no comprehensive compendium existed to provide pivotal facts and show people how all the moving parts work together. In contrast to spending years of your life studying income tax law, you can simply read Income Tax Shattering the Myths, which I published in 2010 and is today the comprehensive compendium that did not exist when I began my journey. Because of the arduous way I had to come by my knowledge of income tax, I understood that virtually no one was going to spend years of their life in law libraries poring over thousands of documents in order to understand the truth of the income tax. If that was how it had to be done, the truth would remain hidden from the American people forever. So that my countrymen could learn the truth without having to take the same path I did, I wrote Income Tax Shattering the Myths. You can learn everything you need to know by reading one book. After you read Income Tax Shattering the Myths, you will be the expert in the room, even if the room is filled with accountants and lawyers. Imagine your knowledge being in the top 0.1% of the population on a topic simply by reading one book. Income Tax Shattering the Myths does that for you. Earlier, I mentioned I'm running a special. I recently did a video on how U.S. households are going to be affected by the upcoming tariffs. I'll put a link to that down in the notes, so that my countrymen, who will be saddled with the tariffs, will have the option to know the truth of the income tax and thus safely walk away from it. If you go to my drreality.news website, drreality.news, and use the code tariffs at checkout, you'll get free shipping on any order that contains a copy of Income Tax Shattering the Myths. I suggest you get the 4-pack, which includes Income Tax Shattering the Myths, Body Science, The Business Guide to Payroll Withholding, and The Business Handbook for Forms W-9, 1099, and U.S. Person. The price of the 4-pack is deeply discounted from buying those items individually, and with this special, you also get free shipping. So go to drreality.news and pick up Income Tax Shattering the Myths and or Body Science or the 4-pack. Also, purchasing any of my writings helps me to continue to be here for you with these revealing and thought-provoking presentations. Thank you for sharing your time with me today. I hope you consider it time well spent.